Welcome to the New Species Podcast. I'm your host, Zoe Albion. On this podcast, we learn about recent discoveries of species that are new to science, but not necessarily new to nature. We ask scientists how they found these new species and why they matter. We learn about what makes a new species and hear some behind-the-scenes stories along the way. So join us as we explore the biodiversity of our planet and the scientists who help us better understand it. Welcome to the New Species Podcast. I'm your host, Zoe Albion, and I'm here with Dr. Ishan Agarwal, a scientist at the Thackeray Wildlife Foundation in Mumbai. They're here today to tell me about their paper published in issue 74 of Vertebrate Zoology, in which they and their co-authors describe a genus and five cryptic new species of skinks from India's tropics. Welcome, Ishan. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Zoe.
Could you please share a little bit about yourself and your work?
So I'm broadly an evolutionary biologist or herpetologist even, but I've always been fascinated by the diversity in the natural world around us. And it's been a natural progression since to formally studying biodiversity today. My work broadly involves two aspects, systematics and biogeography, or studying patterns and processes. Systematics involves figuring out how many species we have, where they're distributed, and how they're related to each other, which creates a baseline inventory of patterns of diversity and distribution. And in India, and with many parts of the biodiverse tropics globally, we don't have this basic data across taxonomic groups. And once you have a broad understanding of the patterns of diversity, one can then try and understand what the evolutionary processes were that gave rise to these patterns. One can also, was it past climatic events, geology, or other ecological processes that drove diversification within a group? And we can also use responses to past climate change to figure out how groups will respond to future climate change. I mainly study geckos and other lizards.
And this paper is about skinks. Can you introduce us to skinks?
Yeah, so skinks are lizards of the family Skinkidae, which is one of the most diverse and successful lizard groups across the world. Over 1,700 species of skinks are known, and they're superficially recognizable in being relatively elongate, covered with shiny scales, and they have an external ear opening which can distinguish them from snakes. And skinks also have varying degrees of limb development and loss, which makes them a useful system in evo-devo studies. Skinks are predators of arthropods and small vertebrates, besides acting as prey for some arthropods and small vertebrates. So yeah, as I said, they're one of the major lizard families, like geckos, monitors, agamids, many families across the world. I think the oldest skink fossils are close to 100 million years old. And besides being incredibly diverse in the number of species we have, they're also extremely diverse ecologically. They're found from sea level to over 4,500 meters. They're found in the tropics and highest diversity in the tropics, but they also extend into temperate regions. And you have diurnal, cathemeral, or nocturnal species. Cathemeral is when they're variable in the time of activity. And you have terrestrial, aquatic, arboreal, fossorial, which is burrowing, and rock-dwelling species. And they also vary in size from as small as 27 mm. to over 10 times as large at 350 mm. And I also already mentioned that there are many different instances of limb loss or limb reduction. And one of the other striking things about skinks is that about a third of the species are viviparous, which means they've evolved to retain their eggs and give birth to live young. I think that's about as much as, that's enough information on skinks for now.
And what do these new species of skinks look like among all that variety?
Yeah, these new species are actually pretty similar looking to each other. They're generally brownish skinks with a dark lateral pattern, which is yellow in breeding males. And these are all fairly similarly sized species, reaching a total size of just about 100 mm, of which the body is about half that length. So they're fairly small and they're pretty drab colored, all pretty similar to each other. And that's what makes them a cryptic species.
Yeah, so what is a cryptic species?
Yeah, so cryptic species are those that are morphologically almost indistinguishable from one another, or at least are very similar superficially. So today we have DNA sequence data, which allows us to understand if two populations are divergent from one another, and also if that level of divergence is likely to represent either a species level or a population level split. And what we're finding all across the world, and of course in India in particular, is that what were thought to be widely distributed species are in fact complexes of closely related cryptic species. And like in the case of these skinks. And there are a few reasons that species tend to be cryptic. One could be to do with them having diversified very recently. And so there hasn't been enough time for them to start looking different from one another. Another is niche conservatism or evolutionary inertia, or simply the tendency to remain the same. Many of these groups are just, even after millions and millions of years apart, don't really change the way they look. Another thing is to do with diversification in allopatry, where the populations are geographically separated, and because of that physical separation, they begin to diverge from one another. But there may not be selection in each of these habitats for them to diverge in their morphology. So they end up continuing to look very similar.
Can you talk a little bit about the global distribution of these skinks and where they might be found?
Okay, about unique in that it's restricted to relatively seasonal habitats in the western Ghats of Peninsular India. And their sister group is Sabdolyseps, is found in Southeast Asia. Yeah, so Dravidoceps are known from many parts of Tamil Nadu, one of the southern states in India, besides the northern western Ghats of Goa and Maharashtra. And it's likely they'll be found in some similar intervening habitats in the western Ghats of Karnataka, but they haven't been recorded from there so far. So before we started this study, yeah, less than 10 specimens had ever been collected, of which the types of two species had been lost. And so yeah, we collected close to 100 specimens, I think, from over 30 localities. So that's changing what we know about them quite dramatically.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and all this
Yeah.
is thanks to our amazing field team, Akshay Khandekar, a couple of interns, and many other people who'd help out on field trips, because otherwise it's impossible to catch these skinks.
I really enjoyed the image that was sort of taking shape in my head of many, you said about six people sort of standing around this cleared out area, kind of waiting for the skink to come their way.
Yeah,
And
and
I'm sure it's a group effort.
only one person is supposed to be moving stuff. Everyone else is watching. And yeah.
And then you just jump on
Yeah,
it.
basically. I enjoy being out in the field. That's one of the best things about the work I do, is the opportunity to actually go out in the field and collect these amazing creatures.
So, what was the landscape like, and how did you reach the collecting area?
So the landscape we collected these skinks from is largely mountainous, with a diversity of forest types along the elevation gradient. These skinks are most often found in deciduous forests, and most of these were accessible by road or a short hike, but others involved day-long hikes up an elevational gradient. Some days we'd climb as much as 1,000 meters. So we collected published records of these skinks, and as I said, there were only a few specimens known. There was three species known in this genus when we started working, and just a handful of specimens. And so we collected records of these guys from across their known range and sampled all the few known areas as well as likely habitats across the northern Western Ghats and Tamil Nadu. We collected on multiple field trips from about 2018 to 2023. And we had about between three and six people that sampled over 350 locations in about 12 months of total fieldwork across that time frame. Of course, we weren't only looking for skinks. We were looking for lizards in general. But these are the areas we ended up sampling.
Is this all hand collecting? How do you find them?
These skinks are partially burrowing, so you find them in leaf litter, loose soil, and under rocks. Of course, when they're active, you can spot them moving around in the forest floor when it isn't too warm, and they're often disturbed by us walking around. And a really cool thing that one of my collaborators, Akshay, showed me was so you often find lizards under rocks taking as cover, but these guys are often buried in loose soil under a rock. So that's something I didn't know that burrowing skinks did. So you not only do you have to lift a rock and hope to see a lizard there, but you also have to disturb the soil, and sometimes a Dravidoceps pops out. Catching them is usually a team effort because they're really fast get into crevices and things. So you have to clear the leaf litter around where you last saw it, so that you'll be able to see if it darts out of there, and slowly start moving cover till you see the skink and try and grab it. And we'd also occasionally stun them with rubber bands. So that's also, you can shoot them with a large rubber band, and it usually stuns them because, it's often the only way you can get them.
Maybe that wasn't what you expected to be doing with your career when you were sitting in school a few years ago.
I was in school a long time ago, but I was always interested in reptiles, I think, since school. Yeah, and in general, nature and the outdoors. So I pretty much landed up where I wanted to be.
That's wonderful to hear. There's a lot to discuss when it comes to the genetic analysis of this paper, because you and your co-authors set out to revise all of Indian Subdoluceps, which I think is pretty impressive. So let's begin with the genetic analysis. Can you tell us what analyses you conducted and what you learned?
So for this paper, we were able to generate a pretty large molecular data set. We sequenced two mitochondrial and three nuclear markers. Mitochondrial genes are quicker evolving, but they're only maternally inherited. Nuclear genes are much more slow evolving. The genetic analysis were used to tell us a few different things. We first wanted to figure out what the higher level relationships are between the Indian and Southeast Asian subdoliceps within the broader Lygosomine, which is the higher classification, the group above that includes subdoliceps, Dravidoceps, and a few other genera. So this involved building a fossil calibrated time tree of skinks to understand the timing of diversification within this group. And our second question was to figure out how many Indian species there might be. And those analyses involved reconstructing evolutionary relationships or building phylogenies to figure out how they're all related to each other and how many species there might be. And finally, also looking at genetic distance in the mitochondrial and nuclear genes across Indian subdoliceps. So that's a broad summary of the molecular data. But an equally important part of the work was all the morphological data that my colleague Akshay meticulously recorded, because those include over 58 morphological characters. Which means counting or measuring 58 different characters. We also did some clearing and staining, which is a technique to study bones and cartilage. And finally, we dissected gravid females to check the condition of developing young within them. And it turns out that these are, viviparous, which is quite unusual.
And can you share a little bit about your new genus?
Well, so it turns out that the Indian skinks, which were formerly assigned to Subdoliceps, are deeply divergent from the Southeast Asian Subdoliceps in molecular sequence data, which immediately tells you that they're likely to represent a separate, a distinct evolutionary unit. I mentioned earlier that there's close to a third of all skink species are viviparous. But most instances of viviparity in reptiles are associated with cooler climates. And Dravidoceps are the first live-bearing skinks from peninsular India. The only viviparous Indian skinks are some species distributed at high elevations of the Himalaya and Northeast India.
Maybe now is a good time to talk about India's biodiversity because it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, someone was recently shared a statistic with me, which said that I think in the last 6 years, overall and every year, India has had the most new reptile descriptions of any country. I've lost track of what that number was now because of it spans a huge latitudinal and longitudinal gradient. India overlaps with three global biodiversity hotspots, part of the Western Ghats, Sri Lanka hotspot, the Himalayas, and Indo-Burma. And this tremendous climatic and topographic heterogeneity, which gives rise to lots and lots of different habitats. And India is particularly interesting if you're interested in biogeography or studying why species are distributed where they are, because it's at the juncture of biogeographic realms as well. Yeah, and my colleagues and I have described quite a few lizards in the recent past. I think maybe 60 species of lizards in the last decade or so. Yeah.
Wow.
I have to check my Excel sheet.
It's hard to keep track. You also moved three existing species into your genus Dravidoceps. Can you talk about what characters or markers sort of helped you make this decision?
So only two of the three species had been previously sampled, and only for a few genes and very limited morphological data. So our broad sampling from across the range of the group in India allowed us to very clearly see that the existing species are members of the new genus, as they fall into the same clade and share the same morphological characters as the other Indian Dravidoceps. One of the third species had actually been sampled and was placed in a different genus because actually the wrong species was sequenced. So Dravidoceps goaensis had been sequenced many years ago, but it actually turns out that that was a completely different genus of skink which had been sequenced and called goaensis online.
And for that process, you had to designate neotypes.
Yeah, sure. All species are represented by a holotype or single specimen, which represents that species and to which the name is linked. So an original description may include a type series, which means multiple specimens. And in some of the earlier descriptions, the holotype may not be explicitly defined. In that case, it's a syntype series. Okay, this is maybe not so important. Okay, let's go over it anyway. If there's a syntype series, which means there's no specific holotype, then a lectotype needs to be designated, while the others then become paralectotypes. In contrast, when either the holotype or the type series of a species is lost, it becomes necessary to designate what's called a neotype or the new type specimen, which then serves the same purpose as the original holotype. So in cases where the type specimen or the type series are lost, one has to designate a new type so that future workers can compare what they have with that specimen. And ideally, one should pick the neotype from either specimens used in the original description, or if they aren't available, then based on a specimen from the original type locality, which is the original place that the holotype came from. If you can't do either of these, because often you find very old records, they may not have a clear locality. For example, some old specimens are just labeled, the holotype is labeled India or Malabar, which are very, very broad regions. And so in this paper, we picked two neotypes for two existing species because both their type series, one was, I think, two or three specimens, and one was one specimen, but they're all lost. They haven't been found in the museum. One of them for at least 25 years, it hasn't been seen, and the other one has gone missing relatively recently, maybe in the last decade or so. Both of these species actually had a pretty specific type locality, and we were able to collect one of them, Dravidoceps pruthi, which was the first species described from this group, from the type locality. But for the second species, Dravidoceps goaensis, we couldn't find any adults from around the type locality. And so therefore, we designated a neotype from a slightly different locality. Anyway, whatever you do, you must make sure that your species matches the original description and justify why you use that specimen as a neotype.
So the types from this paper, where were they deposited?
So our type specimens and other specimens from this study are deposited across three major Indian museums: the Bombay Natural History Society in Bombay, now Mumbai, the National Center for Biological Sciences in Bangalore, and the Zoological Survey of India, Kolkata. We chose these three museums because they're the best maintained national repositories. Splitting the type series across collections is safer in the long run because in case of accidents at any one facility. I mean, historically, there have been museums that have burned down and many, many specimens have been destroyed, obviously. And also for people who want to study these specimens, they can potentially visit any one of these museums and at least examine some of the specimens.
Can you share a few ideas on when and why diversification in this group might have occurred?
So we have pretty limited data on the ecology of species of this new genus. We basically, the only information we have is where they're distributed. And we now have a broad timeline of their diversification because we built a time tree, fossil calibrated time tree. So Dravidoceps evolved at a time of global cooling and increasing seasonality. And they inhabit much cooler, drier, and more seasonal habitats than the egg-laying Southeast Asian Subdoluceps. And it's possible that any of or all of these factors may have contributed to the evolution of viviparity within the group. It's likely that broad-scale diversification within the genus was driven by paleoclimate and the past distribution of forests, but really we need more data to get at fine-scale patterns.
And how did you and your co-authors name this new species?
So for Dravidoceps, we decided to go with what are called toponyms, or names for the type locality for each species. Most of these species are quite localized to their type localities. And so the scientific name also has distributional information attached to it. Besides highlighting these important biodiverse landscapes that lack many of these areas where we found these endemic skinks and new species of skinks don't have any megafauna. And so it's important to highlight these landscapes because in India, conservation is largely centered around megafauna.
I feel like you've perfectly started to answer the last question, which is why is species description important and why does your new species matter?
Yeah, so if our goal is to conserve biodiversity, the first step has to be to know what diversity we have and where it's distributed. It's only then that you can systematically prioritize areas for conservation. So many of the species we have discovered are restricted in their distribution, endemic to just one hilltop or a massive or other small area. And so this knowledge can potentially help us protect these microendemic species. Here, I'm more generally talking about not just these skinks, because these skinks are relatively widely distributed, but many of the geckos that we've discovered are really, really restricted in distribution. Species form the basic units of study in ecology and evolution. And not having this basic information can skew your results dramatically. One review that I had looked at found up to 100% error in species diversity when taxonomy was ignored. So they used what are called operational taxonomic units, where you just superficially recognize things in the field and treat them as your units. And so that review found that it was up to 100% error, which is quite ridiculous. We're in the sixth mass extinction, and it's more important than ever to catalog and document biodiversity before it's lost forever.
I'm looking forward to following your work as you and your co-authors describe all sorts of new lizards, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast.
It was fun, and I'm looking forward to listening to this whenever it comes out, and your regular programming as well.
Thank you. We don't have as many herps as I would like, but we try.
Ishan Agarwal's paper, A Non-Adaptive Radiation of Viviparous Skinks from the Seasonal Tropics of India, Systematics of Subdoluceps, with Description of a New Genus and 5 Cryptic New Species, is in issue 74 of Vertebrate Zoology. See the episode details for an open access link to the paper and a full transcript of this episode. To learn more about Ishan and their work, you can follow them on Instagram at Geckoella, GECKOELLA. I definitely recommend doing so. Ishan does some incredible photography. To read all of Ishan's papers, you can follow the Dropbox link in the description. Special thanks goes to recent podcast guest Prakrit Jain for recommending this paper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the New Species Podcast. This podcast was created by Brian Patrick and is edited and produced by Zoe Albion. If you would like to support us, please consider subscribing to our Patreon at patreon.com/newspeciespod. And if you'd like to get in touch with questions or feedback, please email us at newspeciespodcast@gmail.com.
The first Dravidoceps that I ever saw, we collected from the Javadu Hills. And back then I was doing my PhD, which was on geckos. And I had a colleague who was studying skinks. And so we handed that specimen over to him. But then many years later, we ended up doing this. Okay, that's really not very interesting.
Okay, no, I like I think it. Brings it full circle.
Many years later.